The 2020 Suncorp Super Netball season is in the books, and we're back to review the entire season and look back on all eight teams, plus a little bit more player movement. And welcome to the Centre Pass podcast brought to you by Netball Draft Central. My name is Jared Gardner, and as always, I'm joined by Taylor Mulkey and Sophie Taylor. And the 2020 season is done, obviously, but there's still a lot of news within netball circles. And Taylor, over the last week, we've seen another champion of netball retire in Laura Langman. Probably expected, but still sad to see her go.
Yeah, it's almost a bit of a changing of the guard for netball at the end of this season. We've seen the likes of Katie Thwaites and Tegan Phillip retire, and now we've seen the great Laura Langman hang up the dress. And I think I speak for many when I say it was a great privilege to be able to see her play, and she's been such a great contributor to netball, not only for the Ferns, but international netball. You can't not love her. So it's sad to see her go, but as you touched on, Jared, it was a little bit expected, but still hurts.
Yeah, definitely. And Sophie, now the season is over. We're looking at player exchanges and player transfers. And the one that has been confirmed over the last week is Sasha Glasgow moving to the West Coast Fever for 2021. A very interesting move, but it'll be interesting to see how that one goes.
Yeah, I'm really intrigued by this one. And it was kind of evident as soon as it was announced that Kalia Stanton wasn't being handed another contract that it was going to be Glasgow who would be taking her spot. And I think she'll really benefit from that. She's showcased some really great movement, and she's a really reliable option, probably a little bit more reliable than Stanton was. So I think she'll be really, really great when she goes to Fever. And it's quite funny, though. It's kind of been going around the netball internet, I guess, that she could have been going to the Vixens. And it's kind of been a little bit of a chapter of contention almost for people saying, oh, nah, she's not going to go to Vixens. She's going to go here. She's going to go there. So I think it's really good that she's been able to snatch up that extra position on the Fever roster for next season.
Yeah, we'll have to wait and see how that one does go. We will get into a full review of the 2020 Suncorp Super Netball season a little bit later, but we will talk about a little bit of that player movement to start off with. And as we said off the top, as Taylor spoke about, Laura Langman retiring. She's one of the all-time greats for world netball. She's done basically everything there is to do in the world of netball and had one of the best careers we've ever seen. Sophie, I might go to you now. As we said, it probably was expected that it was going to be this year that she did retire, but just an amazing career.
Yeah, it's safe to say that that's a huge, huge blow to international netball. She's been such a leader for so, so long, not only in New Zealand, but in the centre position, like kind of, and wing defence to an extent too. Yeah, really leading the way and making it, really helping to make netball the elite sport that it is. She's always been so fantastic in that way. And I think it's a huge, huge credit to her that she's been able to come this far. And of course, it's devastating. And I feel like we almost accidentally jinxed it last week because I kind of semi-mentioned that there was potential she'd retire. So I'm sorry about that. But yeah, it's a huge loss to netball. And I think the way she went out as well is such a testament to her too. She's always been a very, very humble player, always crediting the players around her before crediting her own efforts. And that's exactly how she went out. She went out quietly. There was no fancy announcement. There was no big fanfare at the end of the season, which is sad for those Sunshine Coast Lightning fans and fans in general not being able to kind of applaud her off the court, but it's a very Laura Langman way to go, and it's just such a credit to her, the season and the years that she's had out on the netball court.
Yeah, 100%. She's been playing for such a long time now, and as I said, she's done basically everything. Won two Commonwealth Games gold medals in 2006, in 2010, and then I think the final one was that World Championships gold medal that her and the Silver Ferns got in 2019 in Liverpool. So she's just been one of the most amazing players to watch, whether it's been with New Zealand, whether it was with the Swifts, whether it was with the Lightning. She's just, yeah, done everything. And I think what it does bring up, it does leave a massive hole in the Lightning's lineup for 2021. Obviously, she did have 1 year off. It was 2018 that she didn't play for the Lightning, but she's been just a stalwart for them. Now in that centre position, there is a bit of talk going around that Mahalia Cassidy could be the replacement. She obviously said she was exploring her free agency options after seemingly leaving the Firebirds for 2021. Taylor, do you think that's a good move for her to go to the Lightning?
Yeah, I think it's a really good move for Mahalia Cassidy to make that switch. I think she'll inject that youth and that speed in the side. And I think it's fair to say that Laura Sherrian was down on her usual lofty standards this season. So I think having that energy of Cassidy through the centre will really help. And she's very much a like-for-like with Langman in terms of she's more of that defensive-minded centre. So she can definitely help with that clogging of the space and winning ball back. And as in true Laura Langman fashion, they like to call bin chicken. She's known for picking up those loose balls and things like that. So I think that it would be a really good switch and just almost a seamless transition to bring someone like Cassidy into that group and then allow Sherrian to get back to those ways, because she is that attacking player, the one that sets up those movements and the plays at hand. So I think it would be a really smart decision for Cassidy and the Lightning as a whole to bring her into the team. Otherwise, I'm not really sure who else could potentially fill that buffer or that hole. So yeah, it will be very interesting to see what happens next, but I have a sneaky suspicion that that would be the case.
Yeah, based on kind of the, I mean, not lack of player movement, but obviously there's still quite a few weeks left of the actual player signings period. So that's always something to keep in consideration. Obviously, there's still quite a few players that are kind of not accounted for when it comes to where they're contracted or uncontracted next season, which kind of makes it very interesting, because I was kind of thinking, I don't know, will she be looking for a completely fresh start going away from Queensland altogether? But what kind of opportunities are there? I mean, Vixens, Magpies seem to have tied up most of their loose ends. I don't think Kate Maloney has signed back on yet, but I wouldn't be surprised if she signs on like straight away and they're just waiting to announce it. So I'm kind of wondering if there is any other place where she would be able to go, unless we hear about another player who we're expecting to sign on, who is going to be announced as exploring their options in the coming weeks. So who knows, really?
Yeah, it is definitely going to be an interesting one. There is still, as you said, Sophie, a fair bit of time in the signing period. It looks like, if I'm reading this right, it's the Monday the 16th of November when that signing period does conclude. And then from then on, teams can start signing training partners and the like. So we still don't have a definite answer about list sizes for 2020, whether that is going to be 10 players or 12 players. Personally, I don't think the two of you are on the same page as me. I hope it is 12, because I really liked seeing those extended squads in 2020, and it probably did give that opportunity to some of those younger players to get a chance and get their go on court. The only real actual player movement that has happened so far, at least in the last week, is Sasha Glasgow going to the Fever. Sophie, you spoke about it a little bit earlier, so Taylor, I might go to you now. It was a little bit of a surprise to me. I probably didn't expect it. I thought, obviously, you've got Janiel Fowler, who's the best shooter in the league, and then Alistair Neild, who's coming off a career-best season. So Glasgow is a really talented player, but I would have loved to see her go somewhere where it was probably set in stone that she could be, or not set in stone, but more of a chance of her being a starter. What did you think, Taylor?
I thought it was a little bit of a silly move, and that might sound harsh, but I don't think that it's going to really benefit her, because I see her more as that goal shooter, and clearly the position is always going to go to Janiel Fowler. And I think, as harsh of a critic as I have been of Alice Teague-Neal, I really think she stood up this season and she plays more of that feeding role with a supplementary goaler, where that's not really Sasha Glasgow's style. Her style is to be the goaler, or to at least share the load evenly between herself and another shooter, not be the one that would just dish off the ball into the goal circle. So I'm really intrigued to see what they do here, and maybe it's more from a playmaking perspective that she's joining the Fever. Because, like you touched on there, Jared, I kind of expected her to go somewhere that would at least offer her a starting position. And I don't necessarily see that with the Fever. Clearly, they've had great success this year, making it all the way to the grand final. They've also signed on the likes of Emma Koch, who is also a goaler, able to play in wing attack. So it's almost as if, yeah, it's a bit of a confusing decision as to why she would go there, but clearly they've got something in mind, and she has faith in them that she'll be able to get some regular court time and all of that. I would have thought that potentially the Vixens would have showed a little bit of interest, and although, like I touched on, I do think she's more of that goal shooter, I do think that the Vixens at least have shown that ability to rotate through their players, and she could potentially have gotten a chance or a more regular court time out in goal attack and then potentially switched into that goal shooter position. So, yeah, it's a very, very interesting move by Glasgow, because I would have thought that, like we've kind of said, that the Fever pretty much have their shooting circle notched up and secured, and I don't really see them straying too far from that.
See, I kind of think it's a smart move versatility-wise by the Fever, because even though Koch was an option to come into goal attack and to kind of move the players around like it's a game of chess, Sasha Glasgow is a lot more versatile than Kalia Stanton in the way that she can play a couple of different roles out in goals. And I think there's this change, even though I don't think it's necessarily the best thing for Sasha Glasgow's future. Maybe this is something just for a year or so, just to kind of find her form again. I think it could be a smart option for when ATN isn't quite on song. They have a really, really consistent goaler who can actually jump on into goal attack, and ATN can move out to wing attack. They have now three goalers who are like, so obviously you'd have Fowler and goal shooter. ATN can go wing attack, goal attack. Glasgow can go goal shooter, goal attack. And Koch can go wing attack, goal attack. So they've actually got a really, really versatile attack line. And it's kind of that same thing as we've mentioned in past weeks, where the Melbourne Vixens were certainly an option, but it's been well known for a long time now that they look to their own depth. They look to the Victorian pathways. And even though they may need someone else to step up for one season from an alternate pathway, an alternate state, I think it's a smarter decision for Glasgow to go to the Fever now and potentially have a few years with them rather than go to the Vixens for a season then and back in the same position next season, if that makes sense.
But would you not think this... Oh, go, Jared. Go. I was going to say, my only question would be, would you not think that having the services of someone like Sherelle McMahon as a coach would further help develop someone like Sasha Glasgow, who is still finding her form and finding her feet? She is coming back from an ACL injury, and I don't think this season she got a wealth of court time, so she'll be looking to build that up. But then she's also being forced into that goal attack position or that shooting position. So I think that if she had gone to the Vixens, having someone like McMahon coach her would have been really beneficial, not only to her, but for the future and potentially future Diamonds. That was my only other slight note, thinking, well, if she did end up there, clearly she hasn't, but if she did, that could have been a huge bonus for them.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's more of a fact that the Vixens want to blood up their own young players rather than a factor of the coaching there. I don't think Glasgow would have turned down the Vixens if the Vixens had come asking for it. So I think it's more the other way around of the Vixens going, no, you know what, we have an opportunity here to bring in some young talent and blood them up. Coming off a really successful season and coming into that kind of, having some young players coming back up into that pathway, into the Vixen squad, and kind of building off that success. I think that's something they're more looking forward to, developing players for the future rather than for the right now. And I think even though Glasgow would have certainly benefited off that and benefited off having Sherelle McMahon there, obviously legend of the game, I think, yeah, it's more of a case of the Vixens saying, you know what, we're gonna continue with the talent we have, because that's what they've done for years and years. I mean, if anything, I reckon Glasgow is probably banking on the fact that ATN has shown some good form. Hopefully that ATN after next season will return to Victoria, because she's a Victorian. She started in the Victorian pathways with the Vixens. I wouldn't be surprised to see her back with the Vixens in a couple of years once she's proved to be a little bit more consistent across more than maybe one game a season.
Yeah, we'll just have to wait and see how that one does play out. Fever, with signing Glasgow, have now got a roster of 10 players for 2021. As we said, we don't know whether that the limit will be increased to 12, but they weren't able to sign Ingrid Collier to a contract for 2021, as she will be basically injured and out for the entire season. So Glasgow does come in as the replacement there. Now we will move on and we will go through the 2020 season. And we're going to go team by team. We're going to go in reverse order of the ladder. So we'll start with the Magpies, and probably won't spend too much time on these bottom couple of sides, especially the Magpies, because we've spoken about them a lot throughout the season and towards the end of the season. It was just disappointing, and that's the only way to describe it. One win and 13 losses for the season. It was just a very tough year for Magpies fans, for the players. We know obviously they went into 2020 on the back foot. They'd lost players to pregnancy, to injuries. They had the Brown sisters both coming back from serious knee injuries. Wasn't looking good from the start, but I don't think anyone expected one win for an entire season. What did you guys think of the Magpies overall?
I mean, where do we start with the Magpies? I think they really lacked that experience. And I mean, like you just said, Jared, they had so many things come at them, and to the point where they just could not cope with the amount of changes that were going on. And I don't think the fans could cope either. There was just so many things happening and going on behind closed doors. And I think it was maybe the Magpies got up to the hub and you find out that players haven't gone up there, but it was just really interesting. I think the Magpies really suffered this season. They didn't have a lot of experience out on court. I mean, you look at someone like Mel Bragg, who was a training partner last year, and I'm fairly certain she got elevated and she ends up being one of the most experienced players on their midcourt by the end of the season. And I think that's a really tough position for a player to be in. And obviously, she had a great season. You look at the likes of Molly Jovic and Callie Altman had her time in the end. You look at players like Tyler Orr, who came in for like four games at the end of the season, had never played SSN, had never trained SSN. It was just kind of a miss, a real miss for the Magpies this season. And I don't think it's fully down to the players. I think it was just what happened off the court with the players that they were losing. It just all kind of snowballed, and they were never really able to capitalize on opportunities on the court. And I think, yeah, it was a disappointing season, but I mean, that's kind of to be expected when there's so much happening.
For me, I think it was more like the Magpies were trying to force pieces of a jigsaw puzzle into places where they didn't belong. They were trying to continuously roll out this game plan that was tried and tested but wasn't actually working. And it's incredibly hard to replace someone like Nat Medhurst. She's such a playmaker, and the way she goes about things on court, you just know she has that flair, that leadership and that experience. And while I think that Gabby Sinclair had moments where she could really step up to the plate, it wasn't a like for like, so they automatically lost that link into Nelson, which therefore allowed other teams to get on top quite easily. Same through the midcourt, Maddie and Kelsey going down, bada bing, bada boom, you've lost that experience once again. And so I think it was just key players here, there and everywhere that they missed, but they continued to try and play that similar brand of netball that just wasn't working. And defensively, I think Jodie Ann Ward really started to come into it and find her feet towards the back end of the season. So that's a really exciting element to think that that partnership with her and mentor is going to continue next season. One thing I will just quickly bring up though is that I found it extremely interesting that they didn't sign on Matilda Garrett. And
yes,
especially
after she really proved herself at the end of the season. So clearly, I mean, I took that as them being like, yeah, she's been performing well in training. Maybe it was the Magpies going, hey, we're not going to sign her on. Everyone else look and see what she can do.
It's a very interesting move because she's also been named in the development squad. So clearly she's touted as a high prospect and that she's definitely got the skill and we've seen that. So I am interested to see what happens in that regard and whether or not Collingwood will pick up another defensive player that can kind of lift that bar again next season and they can really drive that defensive force. But all in all, I think we've all, or you summed it up at the very start, Jared, saying it was a disappointing season, but there are some glimmers of hope.
Yeah, there definitely were. And obviously, Jeeva Mentor is one that just continues to impress. And she won their best and fairest. Molly Jovich was second in that one. And she's one both you mentioned that it was really exciting in 2020 and a good sign for Magpies fans. I was going to bring up Matilda Garrett and that baffled me when I first saw that because I just didn't see that coming at all because I just didn't see that as a possibility because they put so much time and effort into her over the last couple of years and then to just discard her like it's nothing, it just didn't feel right. And there is a place for her in Suncorp Super Netball. And as you said, she's in the development squad for the Diamonds. So she is a highly touted prospect, and I'll be very excited to see where she does go because I think she'll provide a very good option to whichever team she does find in the off season. Moving on now, and in seventh place on the ladder in 2020 were the Adelaide Thunderbirds, 5 wins and 9 losses. They were really impressive this season, and their record probably doesn't show just how good they were throughout the season. They were pretty consistent and really challenged a few of the top sides. So with the roster they've got, they're really exciting for future years.
Yeah, I was about to say that I think their season that they had isn't representative of a second last on the ladder position. They had some really, really great games and they're the only team that beat both the two grand finalists. They beat Vixens early on in the season and they beat Fever in the last round, I think it was. So I think the Thunderbirds have so much to offer, and this season in particular, they really were the underdogs, and you kind of found yourself cheering for them in every game just because they had so much to offer and so many players that could kind of step out and do their role really, really well. I mean, you look at some of those players. I mean, Georgie Horgis, absolute jet. We had her on at the beginning of the season. We didn't know whether she was going to get more than that first game, and she ended up taking the court in every single game during the season. And then you've got other players around the court. Maisie Nankervell is another one that comes to mind. They do have a few changes going into next year, which I wasn't too happy about because you look at the likes of Kate Shimmin and Chelsea Pittman. They're the two that have been kind of left off the list for next season, and those two have been such servants to the club over the past few years. So that kind of doesn't sit too well with me. I feel like that those players in particular deserved a lot better than the way they've kind of been left on the curb in a way. But overall, I think the Thunderbirds, their issues this season weren't down to one single player. It was more so that they kind of just get caught behind and weren't able to work their way back into the game. So they have plenty to offer next season. I'm really, really interested to see how they go without those two key cogs in there, because those two players, even when they're not playing their best, they do so much off the ball and use their experience and leadership to really help push those young ones forward. And now they have a very, very young list going into 2021.
And just on that, I think Pittman is really the key for that, because as harsh as this might sound, Shimmin didn't get a wealth of court time. So when you take someone out of your starting seven, like Chelsea Pittman, and now have to find a replacement, it's going to be incredibly hard. But all in all, it was a really good season from the Thunderbirds. And I think we've all touched on it saying there's no way I thought that they finished seventh. The wins that they had and just the consistent brand of netball was really enjoyable to watch. And I think what I really enjoyed the most was just the fact that they seemed to have like that weight lifted off their shoulder. They played with great confidence and they backed each other in. And that was really, really good, because you like to feel like everyone is on the same path going forward. They knew their plays. They were really well structured. And Shamira Sterling for me was another key player. She kind of took that step up this year. She had moments last year where you were like, wow, that's just amazing. But this year, She brought a whole different attitude, and I think, and that was really key, because once she shifted that attitude and that focus, the rest of the team was able to kind of thrive off her pressure, off her wins. And yeah, it was a really, really good season, and harsh that they finished seventh, because you just wouldn't have guessed it. So yeah, I think that they will be happy with it, but moving forward, they definitely need to build on what they've got.
Yeah, 100%. And I think that that seventh place really just is due to the fact of how strong the competition is as a whole. So it really was a dogfight for those last couple of positions. And you really think that either of those, any of those teams that finished from five to seven, could definitely have played finals and done damage in the finals. So it's a good sign for the league as a whole that it is so competitive, and it will be for the next couple of years. In sixth place on the ladder were the Giants. So they had five wins like the Thunderbirds, but they had two draws and seven losses. So I was really confident on the Giants going into the season. I thought they had a really good mix. Obviously lost Kim Green, but I thought you look at Amy Parmenter and Jamie Lee Price, I thought they were really ready to take the reins of that midcourt. It didn't go the way they wanted, and at some points in the season they were in the news for the wrong reasons, but I think overall they probably would have liked to have played finals, but there's still a lot of positives to take out of 2020. Sophie, what did you think?
I'll be honest, I was really disappointed with the Giants this season. I thought they had so much potential and could really go far, but they put way too much worth on the super shot, and they focused so much on that they didn't actually play their game plan for the rest of the game. And I think if when you're only playing and putting those hard yards in for 20 minutes of a game, 5 minutes at the end of each quarter, it's not enough. And I think there was... It just wasn't enough for me. I wanted to see more. You look at those players, like you already mentioned, Amy Parmenter and JLP. And JLP is still not quite my favourite player, but there's no denying she had a great season. And the two of them were constant workhorses. You even look at Pullman and Manawa, they had a much better season than last season too. It was just that attack line that wasn't working. And it wasn't necessarily because they don't have the talent, because you look at Joe Harden and Kira Austin, two amazing goalers, but the way it was going just wasn't enough, and that it was just so much was put on that super shot. I mean, you look at someone like Kira Austin, she has so much potential, and she's a really, really great goaler, really great mover. She is one of the, I'd say arguably one of the best goal attacks in our game, but she was rendered quite inaccurate because of the super shot. She'd be going for the super shot, and then consistently she'd gradually lose her accuracy as the game went on and would keep going for it. And I think it's things like that where clearly that was their game plan. Great, good on them for having a game plan, but there needs to be a fallback. And when that's consistently happening all season and there's no change to that, something's not happening right. So that really frustrated me, because by the end of the season with the super shot, I felt like they kind of lost confidence, because they knew by that point that they kind of weren't going to be winning a game unless it was the super shot that was coming into play. It was just frustrating.
If I'm perfectly honest, I almost think that sixth spot flatters them. I think that the Thunderbirds probably put out a more consistent brand of netball and a more enjoyable brand of netball. And that may sound incredibly harsh, but I think that there were moments of play with the Giants that they just really lacked something. And I think that was quite evident across the court. And for me, it was more the stagnant ball movement, which was really a key issue. So they often got caught trying to transition that ball through the midcourt or in the attacking third. And like we touched on, clearly I think Parmenter and JLP, they were the two dominant figures, and rightfully so, they just went and went and went. And that's full credit to them and that desire and that hunt. Clearly they're still young, so they're trying to forge their name, and they definitely did that this season. And I think Parmy, as we touched on, was really unlucky to not get a call up to the Diamonds, because I would have had her in my squad within a heartbeat, because she's just that spark of joy every time you see her out in the court, and she provides such energy and tenacity out there. And I think defensively, Christiana Manu and Sam Pullman were really good. I also liked having Tilly McDonnell come on every now and then. I think that she's got a super bright future, and I can't wait for her to get some more court time. I'm 99% sure they've already signed her on. So that's a really good leap of faith, because she's shown glimpses but hasn't been able to get out there regularly. And as we've touched on, we all know that the shooting end had its issues. Clearly having someone like the Australian Diamonds captain on the bench, it's not a great look, and they definitely could have used her services a whole lot more, in my opinion. She's a formidable option under the post who can put up 40 plus goals at about a 90% accuracy. It's just a question of what could have happened or what could have been if they were able to grind out a couple more of those games. And as you mentioned, Soph actually adapted their game plan when things weren't going to plan. But all in all, you know, sixth spot, like I said, it's a good finish for them, but that's a second year where they've missed out on finals. And I bet that that's not something that they're happy with. Jared, what were your thoughts?
Yeah, I think, as I said, I was pretty big on them going into the season, and I thought they were a really good chance to not only play finals, but really challenge for the premiership. And I was very wrong on that one. It was just, the season was just, it just didn't go their way. And I know 2020 was tough for everyone, but they just couldn't seem to get it working at any point. When they kind of looked on an upward trajectory and they looked like they were just about to really start doing some damage, it just was something else that hit them. And the drama surrounding Caitlin Bassett just didn't help, because it was all everyone wanted to talk about when you spoke about the Giants this year. So they've got the talent, and there's no doubt about that. And as you said, you look at the young players like Tilly McDonnell coming through, and there's so many great players all across the court for the Giants. So there's no reason why they can't be one of the top teams. It just has to all come together. And I hope we do see that in 2021, because it'll be better for the whole competition if the Giants are right up there. Moving on now, and in fifth spot, so just outside of finals, were the Queensland Firebirds, 6 wins, a draw, and 7 losses in 2020. So they finished 8 points out of finals, so they were a long way away in the end, but I think probably finished a bit higher than I expected. I thought this was going to be another development year, and 2021 was where they really took the next step. Taylor, I might go to you first. What did you think about the season up in Queensland?
Oh, I was so, so impressed with them. I think I personally didn't write them, I wrote them off at the start of the season. I didn't think that they were going to be able to deliver as well as they did, especially with Gretel Bueta announcing her pregnancy. I was like, that's a huge loss to that side, and how are you going to replace her? Well, never mind Gretel Bueta, because we've got Tipper Dwan, and she just absolutely wowed. Like, she stunned the competition, and it was that consistent performance and that never say die attitude. And I think that she really almost reinvigorated Romelda Aiken, and the way that Aiken played. It was just that signature, you know, flair and tenacity and excitement. Every time she went near the ball, you knew something was going to happen. And the most important thing is, it was almost as if Aiken had kind of settled into that role. She knew she had to be the leader in that attacking end, with Gemma Maimai, Macy Gardner, Lara Dunkley, all these young fresh faces. They needed someone to look up to and provide that consistency in the goal circle, and she definitely did that this year. And then you look down back, and just like so excited just thinking about Tara Hinchliff and Kim Jenner for future years. Clearly Jenner was rewarded with a call up to the Diamonds this year, but I think it was her approach to actually clean up her play. We've been critical of that in the past, that she at times barrels through players, especially towards the latter end of the game when she starts to tire. And I think that that's a full credit to Jenki and the coaching staff there. They really honed in those skills and helped her to kind of read the play and know when to go and when to stop. So for me, it was a really, really impressive performance by the Firebirds. And they definitely took that underdog mantle really well, because it allowed them to play with freedom. And that's what they need to do, play with freedom and speed of ball movement. And yeah, it was a really impressive season. I'll wrap up now, because I could go on forever.
See, I agree with that. I think there was so much expectation on the Firebirds last season, and especially getting towards those latter rounds of the season, I think they managed to get one win on the board in the end. But there was so much expectation, and they just couldn't quite make it there. So this year, coming in as the underdogs, they really relished that. And I think, obviously, you've brought up about 98% of the players on court there, Taylor. But I think for me, the real game changer was Romelda Aiken. She's probably been one of the more inconsistent goalers, probably over the last year in particular. Obviously, getting injured certainly didn't help that. And the Firebirds had so many issues last year that were going on off the court. But I think Romelda Aiken's turnaround from last year to this year was the real game changer there. Because if Aiken hadn't done that, there's no way that Tipper Duan would have been able to perform the way that she did. And at the end of the day, the stuff that Jenna and Hinchliffe were doing this year, they were doing last year too. It's just that they cleaned it up, like Taylor said. So I think a lot of this season was down to having Aiken back to that peak form. And I think she really showcased some new skills there. She wasn't afraid to mix it up. She was moving a lot more than usual. I just thought she was so, so fantastic this year. And obviously she was given the reward by winning the Firebirds Player of the Season Award. I'm not sure what the name is, but she was my real game changer this season. I really think it's a testament to her that the Firebirds made it to where they did this season.
Yeah, definitely. And I was just about to mention, Romelda Aiken did win the Most Valuable Player, Laura Geitz medal for the Firebirds.
There we go, very I should fittingly. Have known.
So a very impressive season from Romelda Aiken, and finished second in the competition for goals scored. She was a fair way behind Janelle Fowler, but that is because it's Janelle Fowler, and that's understandable. Just finally, I think you've both said it, but you look to 2021 for the Firebirds and the squad they've got, another year with Jenna and Hinchliffe, Gabby Simpson still going as strong as ever, Romelda Aiken really hitting her straps, and then you add Gretel Boedo and you add Kim Revellian into the team, and it's very exciting if you're a Firebirds fan. And Taylor, you've got a massive grin on your face, so I know you're excited for 2021 with the Firebirds. We'll have to wait and see, but wait and see what happens in 2021 for them. Moving on now into the top four, and in fourth place it was New South Wales Swifts. It was obviously, it's going to be disappointing when you don't back up from a premiership season going back to back, but it just probably was a bit of a tough one for the Swifts. Everyone was chasing after them, and they were really the top dog this season. So they did have their moments, and they did play some great netball and showed at times that why they deserved to win in 2019. But in the end, fourth place finish, they probably wouldn't be too happy with that.
Yeah, I don't want to be overly critical of the Swifts because I do really like them as a team, but they really lack that consistency this season. And I mean, I already said I was disappointed in the Giants because I didn't particularly like their game plan. I was more disappointed in the Swifts because they didn't necessarily display that hunt that they did last year. And obviously it's one thing to come into the season as the underdogs, as the Swifts did last year, and then come in and win it all. But it's another thing to back it up. And I just think they didn't kind of show that need to win like they kind of did last year. And I mean, they kind of got over the line. They had a really shaky start, but still won quite a few of their first few games. But then it was just really a lack of consistency. I don't think they've put a full four-quarter effort together across the entire season. And of course, things are going to swap and change when you've got so many changes happening. I mean, the Swifts were probably one of the teams that utilised the rolling subs the most, I think, or just based on my personal opinion. And so I feel like they really lacked that. And obviously you have those players coming back like Maddie Proud. I thought she had a really excellent season, regardless of the fact that it wasn't a great season for the Swifts. I think they just kind of lost some of that gusto that they had last year, and they just couldn't put it together. And obviously they had a few like significant injuries in the mix. Players were kind of in and out of games. You missed Maddie Turner for the first, four rounds. But yeah, overall, I was frustrated with the Swifts because I felt like they could do so much better in each game. You could see things not playing out right on court and almost go, you just need to make this change, and then the change wouldn't happen and things would go the wrong way and they just couldn't work it back. So it was like frustrating, but also I really like the Swifts. So I'm really in like this weird limbo position where I'm like, I don't want to criticize them, but they also didn't have a very good season. I don't know.
I think it was more that it was almost as if some of their performances were lackluster. They didn't come out with that intensity. And then when they didn't come out with that intensity, they'd find it for a quarter, lay all their cards on the table, and then have nothing to back it up. And I think that was a continuous pattern. And one thing I will say is that while I enjoy the rolling subs, I think the Swifts may have utilized it a little bit too much and didn't actually allow play to settle. And then when there was an opportunity to make a change, they didn't. I found that the wing attack position constantly rotating between Nat Haythorn-Thwaite, Maddie Proud, Paige Hadley, I found that really difficult. And I think but I think that the goalers also struggled to adapt to them so much because they have very differing styles. And yeah, it was a difficult season, but they still made finals. So they did something right. They still impressed. I think Sarah Clough was a really strong force down in goalkeeper. You can't go past the likes of Sam Wallace, who just continuously amazes me with some of the aerial ability she has, and just the fact that she's so cool, calm and collected and just takes these amazing grabs, and it's just all as if she was just going for a casual stroll. It's just, she's got such great skill. So I think there's definitely plenty of positives to come out of the Swifts camp, but I think that there's also areas that they would really be desperate to improve on, and that would be consistency and just re-finding that inner energy and that hunt for it.
Yeah, I think that's it. And they'll go into 2021 with, they go back to being the hunters. They're not the hunted anymore. They're not those, that top dog that everyone's coming for. So I think that'll play into their hands, and I think you can't write them off, because with Bryony Akle at the helm and with the players that they do have, there's no reason why they can't be right there at the pointy end of the season once again. So exciting to see what happens there. Coming in third place, actually finished second place in the ladder at the end of the season, but obviously didn't play in the grand final, the Sunshine Coast Lightning. Bit of a weird season in Super Netball when the Lightning aren't playing in the grand final. We hadn't experienced it before, and yeah, it's very strange, but an impressive season. Obviously lost Nolene Tarua, not at the helm for 2020, and we didn't know how much that was going to affect them as a team. Kara Conan was an absolute star for them all season up that front end, and taking control of that shooting circle, which was really impressive. But Taylor, I might go to you first. What did you think about the Lightning?
It's pretty much, it was a 2020 year, like you touched on there, Jared. The fact that Lightning didn't play in the grand final, it's unprecedented, much like the rest of this year. So, you know, it must have been fitting. But I do think that Kara Conan was definitely the star above all. I think for the Lightning, she was that shining light. She consistently provided that option under the post. And it's just the movement of her that really, is really eye-catching. You just don't know what she's going to do, and she has incredible versatility, and I can't wait to see her further develop, especially for the Lightning and for the Diamonds as a whole. I think there are a couple of key players that kind of missed the mark this season, and as harsh as that might sound, Laura Sherrian, I felt, was really tired, and it was almost like she couldn't consistently back up those performances and lacked that signature drive that we have seen so regularly. And Carla Pretorius was down on her impressive standards in saying that, you know, she won the MVP for the Lightning, so she mustn't have been too bad. But I just think that we're so used to the likes of Pretorius, Langman and the like, all stepping up to the plate and constantly delivering. And there were patches throughout the season where that didn't happen. And they did suffer some huge losses at the hands of the Fever. So, yeah, it was an up and down season for the Lightning. But there's, like we keep saying, there's definitely plenty of positives to come out of it. And I think that Pumza Mwaini is another one, kind of slid under the radar this year, but I think she took that next step up and is really finding her feet at that SSN level. Her rebounding ability is exceptional, and that body positioning to kind of block out the opponent and then deliver. So, yeah, I don't know. It was an interesting year on the Lightning's behalf. Soph, what are your thoughts? I can see your brain ticking away.
Yeah, I was just trying to remember whether in an earlier episode, whether we'd mentioned it, like when the season began, when we knew it was going to be a condensed season. Because I know once the season started, we were like, oh, not sure if Lightning will benefit off this. And if anything, I think it was the Lightning that benefited the least off the condensed season. Like we've already mentioned, the players you've mentioned, actually, you look at the likes of Pretorius, Mulwaney, Sherrien, Langman, those four players are very experienced players, but they're also older players with older bodies that can't necessarily handle the same intensity. And I think the Lightning kind of, they still showed plenty of excitement throughout the season, but they were one of the teams that couldn't hold up with that tighter season and tighter turnaround. And I think the other thing that we mentioned throughout the season was their lack of bench depth. I think in other seasons, they've been go, go, go. They've never had to change their bench because of the amount of talent that's out on court. But it really, really became evident this season with players like Sherrien in particular, where they tire out, or even Pretorius. Like we said, Pretorius had a good season, but certainly not great by her standards. It was great in the competition. I think she was still leading quite high in the stats. Maybe she even won goal defense in the team of the season. I can't remember. But by her standards, it wasn't necessarily a great season. And you look to their bench and they had no one who could come in and save the day there. And that was a real issue for the Lightning. And they've never had to deal with that before. So who knows? Maybe they'll be taking notes off teams like the Vixens, maybe not so much the Swifts because they, like we said, probably over capitalize on the rolling subs. But I think they'll really look to deepen their bench over the next season because they can't afford to have a season like this again. And I think at the end of the day, I don't think the Lightning had as good a season as the ladder suggests. I was really shocked when I realized that they had finished second place on the ladder. I thought there was no way they'd finish that high, and I don't think any other team really expected it either after some of the losses they'd suffered throughout the season. So overall, yeah, the Lightning, it was kind of disappointing, but you can kind of look at what could have contributed to that, and they have so much they can build off of this season to go into next year, even though they're going to be missing Langman. They have some really, really top tier talent, and going back to weekly games instead of every 4 days, I think it was, is going to be so beneficial to them.
Yeah, I think it definitely will. And as we speculated a little bit earlier, we might see Mahalia Cassidy in that lineup for 2021, which I think would be a good move. And we'll see how that plays out with that lineup. I think most of that core is basically locked in. I know the defenders are. I'm pretty sure their attacking unit is. I know Laura Sherrien's committed for 2021. So it's a pretty solid lineup. And if you bring in Cassidy, obviously it's not the likes of Laura Langman, but it's still a good player. And they'll be right up there again in 2021. Now moving on to the final two teams. So we will start with the Fever. Obviously runners up this season. 8 wins, a draw, and 5 losses on the year. It felt like when they won, they just did it emphatically. And there are a couple of wins throughout the season, which were 10, even 20 goals. So, yeah, they were able to score when they wanted. And obviously having Jahneel Fowler right up the front there helps. But they're a really great unit with a very well coached by Stacey Marinkovic. So a pretty impressive season after a bit of a down year in 2019.
Yeah, I think the Fever knew that they were coming in as underdogs again. Obviously, everyone knows what they're capable of. And I think they realized once they got out on court, especially in that second half of the season, that the Fever had so much hunt. And I think it was kind of once Ingrid Collier got injured, once they got that great win, it was what, 24 goals, that first win over the Lightning, they found this renewed confidence. And especially with Marinkovic getting handed the Diamonds coaching as well, I think they kind of thought, you know what, we have to prove that we're actually a team that's going to be right up there again. Obviously, they had such a great season back in 2018 and they executed it so well. And I think they're another of those teams that kind of have patches of bench depth, and that's what really worked in their favor. I mean, you look at the young defenders who are out there on court. Sunday Ariang, we've already mentioned about 70,000 times every single episode because she's just such an exciting young prospect. You look at Olivia Lewis, who didn't really get many games in the second half of the season because of how great Ariang was performing, but when she was on court, she was really great. And I think it was their depth and their ability to kind of utilize their young players and give them the confidence to just go out and do what they did best. And I was really excited by the Fever this season, which isn't very like me. but overall, I thought the Fever were really solid. And even though they had that sloppy bit at the start of the season and obviously ended with a loss in round 14 against the Thunderbirds, they were really good and showed a lot of hunt. I thought the Fever were all right.
I'll touch on that and say I think that also their mid-court depth or the versatility that they had with the likes of Ingrid Collier going down, no one expected that, and it's a huge blow that, you know, the starting wing attack and an ACL injury, that's no mean feat, and it's going to be incredibly hard for her to come back. But for the likes of Emma Kosh to step up to the plate and not only do her job, but deliver week in, week out. She was getting 60-minute games. Like, she was playing the entire time. And let's not forget that she's actually a goal attack. So she was moved out of position to play in wing attack, and she did so brilliantly. And I think another key player was the likes of Verity Charles. She was just phenomenal throughout the season. When we were speaking about that grand final matchup, it was potentially her and Maloney were the two best centres, and I think that Charles had really kind of run that midcourt for the Fever, and she became the engine room. She was showcasing her attacking ability, and while she was, you know, not the most defensive minded centre, she still did the hard work, and I think that was really beneficial to allow the other Fever players to either sag off and do what they needed to do, just knowing that she would continuously butter up. And I think that was a really, really impressive season by Charles, and once again she was rewarded for that effort with a Diamonds call up. Although there's going to be no international series, it is still that reward for effort, and I think that she was really, really key to that. And I think that Stacey Francis and Courtney Bruce, you can't go past them. They formed a really strong connection, and just that versatility and belief that they can back each other up depending on the scenario. One can go out hunting, one can go and double back. And I think it was just a really complete season by the Fever, albeit without the start of those first few games, a little bit shaky, but once they found their feet, there was no stopping them. And as you touched on, Jared, the fact that they ran out by like 24 goals at stages just proved how dominant they could be and how much of a scary prospect they are if they get another season to really build on those connections. It's going to be a huge year for them next year.
Yeah, exactly. And just one thing you did touch on, Courtney Bruce and Stacey Francis had an awesome year, but you look at the backup to them in Sunday Ariang and Olivia Lewis, they absolutely shone when they were called upon in 2020. I know I think Courtney Bruce had an injury at some point for a couple of games, and I think Stacey Francis missed it. Yeah, so those two players, Lewis and Ariang, when they did come on, they did their job and did it fantastically. So I feel like I've said this about every team, but they're primed to challenge again in 2021. So there's no reason why they should drop off, and I think with Marinkovic at the helm, they're going to do a good job once again. Finally, now we make it to the Marlon Vixens, obviously the premiers for 2020 in Suncorp Super Netball. They were the best team, the most consistent team across the entire season. 11 wins, 1 draw and 2 losses. An absolutely phenomenal year. You look at their roster and it stars across the court, and we've probably been expecting a season like this from the Vixens for a few years now, because they've always had that talent. It's just been that execution and maybe that little bit of a finals curse, whatever you want to call it. But Sophie, I might start with you. Just an impressive year, and what a way to cap it off.
Yeah, I'll be honest, I'm still on a bit of a premiership high after the season. The Vixens this year, they did everything right, and even those games where they didn't necessarily get the win on the board, you look at the Thunderbirds and Firebirds, they looked so closely at every single thing, and they were able to combat that the next time it came around. And I think it was fully testament to, number one, the coaching, but also the determination of the players to go out there and perform. And I mean, we've spoken a lot about the Vixens and their whole doing it for Vic thing. Obviously, Victoria's had it really, really tough over the last few months in COVID-19. And the Vixens kind of came out there going, you know what, we've got to pick it up. We've got to win this for Victoria and give them something to cheer about. And that's exactly what they did. And it was kind of like they had all this weight on their shoulders, but it wasn't that they had to perform perfectly. They just had to do their jobs. And they did that consistently. And I think you look at the likes of Kate Maloney, Lizzie Watson, Joe Weston, those leaders stepping up and then being able to rotate so many players on and off the court. I mean, it was just a really clean and consistent season from the Vixens. And like I said before, when they had those losses, they were able to build off them and go better the next time around. And they just were so good. And yeah, this year's Vixens, I mean, also doing it for Katie Thwaites and Tegan Phillip, they were just so good. They were just so good. How can you not reward that?
I'm gonna chime in here and say I'm calling it the Kate Eddie effect, because Kate Eddie was with the Swifts last year, and while she didn't play, she was still on their she was still on their list, and now she moved to the Vixens this year, and premiership has followed her. So maybe she wouldn't mind either the Firebirds or the Pies in the coming years, just to even out the see if the premierships follow her. But I think that she was a huge inclusion, and I really think that that versatility is also what added to the Vixens this year. In the past, we've been critical in saying that some of their players are a little bit one-dimensional, can only really play in that one spot, and while they do that job, they do it perfectly. Sometimes having a lack of versatility has halted them, and I think this year they really exploited that. We saw Katie Thwaites out in goal attack. I'm sure she loved that. And, you know, you had Ali Smith as well, the youngster, coming out and getting her game time and really proving her worth. The versatility of Weston to move from goalkeeper in that performance against the Fever to goal defence to wing defence. Eddie to do the same thing. It was just that increased versatility that really worked wonders for the Vixens. And I think it was ended up being like 13 rounds on top of the ladder. So it was a formidable effort by the Victorians, especially considering they were out of home or up in the Queensland hub for over 90 days. It's no easy feat, and full credit to them on a really successful season. But it's going to be interesting to see who they replace, or who they get to replace Katie Thwaites and Tegan Phillip next year.
Yeah, that is the one major question that follows the Vixens. And you generally look at these premiership sides and they're pretty settled, but and across the rest of the court, the Vixens are, but that shooting circle will be an interesting one. Obviously, Maui Kumwenda's done it for a few years now. She is able to take command and be that standout goal shooter. So have no doubt that she'll be firing in 2021, but it will be interesting to see who they do partner her with. That is all for us. That is all we have time for this week. We'll be back in the coming weeks with a bit of transfer talk. We'll talk about the international series that's happening between England and New Zealand. So do listen out for that one. Do go follow us at Centre Pass Pod on Twitter, and do go to netball.draftcentral.com.au for all your world netball news and reviews. And we'll speak to you next week.